The first number on this Wall Ride program on the Grand Ole Opry will be Little Maggie. Bill and Earl will do it.
Come along and join Lisanne DuPont at the legendary Ryman Auditorium. Revered as the mother church of country music, the Ryman has been an anchor of the Nashville music scene for more than a century. The Grand Ole Opry moved into the Ryman back in 1943, and it broadcast weekly shows across the airwaves on WSM 650 AM radio. Even though the Opry outgrew the Ryman in the 1970s, the legendary show returns for winter broadcasts every November through January. From Hank Williams to Flattin' Scruggs, Chet Atkins, Dolly Parton, Emmylou Harris, Johnny Cash, to Patsy Cline and Bob Hope, the list of luminaries who have performed at the Ryman, a National Historic Landmark, is a literal who's who of the American music scene.
Scruggs Grand Ole Opry Show, brought to you by Martha White Mills, millers of Martha White hot rise flour, cornmeal and cake mixes, and pet milk.
Lisa Ann DuPont at the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville, Tennessee. This is like Mecca. This really is. This is cool.
Yeah, it's the coolest.
Let's go back in time, the history of the Ryman. It's been an integral part of Nashville.
We're sitting here right now in the pews on our lower level, and you look around, everyone says, well, it looks like a church. Well, it's because the building did open as a church originally. So in 1892, it opened as the Union Gospel Tabernacle. It remained under that name until about 1904, when Tom Ryman, who was the man that built this beautiful building for us, passed away. And actually, at his funeral, right there, I mean, I can see the spot from here, the preacher stood up and asked, you know, does everyone think that this building should be renamed in Captain Tom's honor? And about 4,000 people stood up. It gives me chills every time because it happened right there. So it is now the Ryman Auditorium.
From the turn of the 20th century, the beginning, all the way through most of the 20th, tell us about some of the incredible performers who came and performed here. Even the early days of the 20th century.
Yeah, there's some really interesting performers in those early days. This place has really always been, and I hope will continue to be, a sort of cultural epicenter for the city. It's where not only you want to see a show, it's where performers want to play. So it's really from both sides of the pews, I like to say. But those early years, there was everyone from Houdini has been on stage here to Charlie Chaplin, Katharine Hepburn, at one point even, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Helen Keller and Ann Sullivan.
Wow, incredible.
Think about that. Yeah. And there's been politicians and presentations about early explorations in Antarctica, and everything you can think of has happened in this building in those early years. And then we get to 1943, which is when the Grand Ole Opry came in to be.
That's incredible, right in the midst of World War II. And then grew where it became nationwide in the sense from on the radio waves. Tell us about that.
Yeah. The Grand Ole Opry came here in 1943, and a lot of people think of this as the original home of the Opry, but it's not, actually. It's the fifth home of the Opry, its most famous former home. But they came in 1943 for all those Saturday nights. They booked up so they could broadcast from here. And if you think about those early years, you had Hank Williams, Little Jimmy Dickens, Minnie Pearl, Roy Acuff. And then moving on a little bit in time, you got Loretta Lynn and Dolly Parton and Johnny Cash. And Patsy Cline was inducted into the Opry here. So really, really incredible years.
And that really was what etched the Grand Ole Opry and the Ryman and Nashville into the minds of people across America.
Definitely, and I think it brought all those artists as well to a national forefront because they were on the radio every Saturday night. There they were. And it brought this building to a national platform, and the radio show expanded as well.
And then, like so many things that are old and surviving through the 20th century, this place eventually closed. What happened?
Yeah, in 1974, the Opry, as it continued to grow, and it does today, it's an incredible show that still is going, they needed a bigger location, so they moved to what we now call the new Grand Ole Opry House, even though now they've been there longer than they were here. And this building went dark for about 20 years. It sat nearly empty. There were some semblance of daytime tours, nothing like what you see now. Intermittent shows would happen, But there was a very good possibility at the time that the Ryman would not survive.
There was a groundswell of support. And as I understand from the myth and legend, it was one female musician who decided to record live here, and that propelled things. Tell us that story.
That definitely helped what was going on. It was Emmy Lou Harris in 1991 recorded her famous record, Live at the Ryman.
Should go astray back in the years with all together around the place we'd romp and play. So lonely now I oftentimes...
That, along with, you know, there was also a groundswell to make this a National Historic Landmark and all these things, but Emmy Lou, you know, really rallied artists together to bring that to the forefront.
So and if that one musician, if she had not decided and really wanted to perform live bad here, the history might be very different, true?
Yeah, it could be a very different situation.
So she did, she came, and everybody rallied, and what happened? How did it get saved?
God bless her. She was, I mean, really a pivotal moment there. And at that, around that time, Gaylord came in. Gaylord, who owns Gaylord Opryland, Gaylord came in and invested about $8 million to refurbish the outside of the building, modernize a lot of things. This wall that's right here behind us wasn't here. There were no real backstage facilities. There was no catering room. There was no production office. There were no elevators back there. There was no air conditioning. So they really brought this building into the time that it needed to be while keeping all the historic features. These pews we're sitting in have been here since 1892.
Amazing. So those who've gone before us, we can almost touch them.
I mean, yeah. Can you imagine who has sat in these pews? And we hear lots of stories. You know, Reba will tell a great story about how she came here before she started her career, and she sat up in the balcony and watched a show. And Johnny Cash came here on a high school trip, and that's when he first laid his eyes on June, and he was sitting right upstairs watching the Opry. So, I mean, it's on both sides of the pews. It's very exciting.
That is so cool. So today, what happens? What sort of performances, and does the Grand Ole Opry ever come back for a special show?
Yeah, the Grand Ole Opry comes back in the winter. They also come back for a limited run of shows called Opry Country Classics. But they come back in the winter and do their shows here. It usually starts in November. It'll go through January. We call it Opry at the Ryman. It's fantastic. But beyond that, we still do 200 concerts a year. We also operate a daytime tour. So hundreds of thousands of people come through on the daytime tour sort of as a pilgrimage to see this iconic place, and an equal number come at night to see concerts every year.
Give us an example of some of the live performances that showcase here.
We have everything. So the other night we had Steven Tyler made his headlining Ryman debut. We also had a Guy Clark celebration that Emmy Lou was on, and Rodney Crowell, and just a whole cast of artists. We've got a comedian appearing. We have all kinds. I mean, anyone you can think of has probably played here, or we hope they will soon.
That's so cool. For further information,
Ryman.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at the Ryman, and that's me behind the tweet, so send us a tweet.
Awesome. I'll tweet you back.
Thank you.
Lisa Ann DuPont, it's been a pleasure to visit with you. Thank you again.
Thank you.
I hear the train a-coming. It's rolling around a bend. And I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when.
The Country Music Hall of Fame in Nashville, Tennessee is the mothership. It houses the entire history of country music from the 1800s up to today, and it's all showcased and revered in a 360,000-square-foot multi-story facility. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. Come along and discover the magic of this massive facility with guide and music aficionado George Dagher, who really knows his stuff, as he plays in John Carter Cash's band, as well as his own, The Early Evening.
Pretty woman, walking down the street, pretty woman, the kind I like.
This is quite an operation, isn't it? It's huge.
yes, we have so many different facets to this place. We're part of the Country Music Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization. It focuses education and preservation of all the musical history. And so this place focuses on not only legends from the 1800s all the way up to the new stars of today.
It really is the Smithsonian of music, Americana. This place is, what, three stories?
Yes.
It looks like a giant coliseum.
We go up at least a few more stories above this with event space and archives. So what you see here is just a tiny fraction of what we actually have in our collection. It's the world's largest collection of country music, memorabilia, recordings.
How many square feet open to the public?
Around 360,000 square feet.
You walk in the front door and you are hit with drama, with voluminous space. Tell us about how it works.
The building itself has so much symbolism in the architecture. From above, we look like a bass clef. From across the lawn, you can see the piano keys. You can see part of the building looks like the fin of a 50s Cadillac. We give nods to grain bins and silos and actual records in the WSM radio tower is part of the rotunda. And so every little bit of it has symbolism, from the stone that they use to the wood on the floor cut to look like grooves and records.
So nothing was by accident or happenstance.
Exactly. It all has a purpose and a flow, from the inside of the elevators looking like an old country barn to this fabulous event space upstairs, which is just amazing. We are connected to the Omni Hotel, and also we have Hatch Show Print here.
That's an actual printery that
yes.
goes way back, that's
yes.
intimately involved with the music scene here. Tell us that story.
Well, in 1879, two brothers, Charles and Herbert Hatch, first began printing in downtown Nashville. We're doing letterpress printing. So we make posters here in Nashville in the building now. We've changed a few locations. We used to be, for about 70 years, right across the street from the Ryman Auditorium. And that was very advantageous to us. So all the stars of the Grand Ole Opry, when they were traveling on the road, would simply walk across to Hatch Show Print and have posters made. And we're talking Roy Acuff, Dolly Parton, and Johnny Cash, and Hank Williams, even Elvis Presley, Chuck Berry, folks that you wouldn't expect, like Taylor Swift, the Rolling Stones, Paul McCartney. They've all had posters made by Hatch Show Print, and still to this day, anyone that plays the Ryman Auditorium will have Hatch make their posters. The artists are better than ever, honestly. I think it's only gotten more creative, and they find new ways of reinventing themselves constantly with a collection of wood and metal type and hand-carved imagery and photo plates, and they've been using these pieces sometimes up to 100 years. It's a great way to join the history of country music also with this unique, iconic imagery that was a part of the story anyway. And so we're also linked up with RCA Studio B up on Music Row. So those are the three wings of the foundation: the Country Music Hall of Fame and Museum, Hatch Show Print Shop, and historic RCA Studio B.
And all three are open to the public for tours?
Yes, on a daily basis. 7 days a week we're doing tours. We do a lot of family programs. Of course, we have our private event spaces too, and it's just constant history and music every single day, and everybody comes from around the world every day to see this. And I've met folks from Sri Lanka and South Africa and Estonia and Macedonia, and of course people like folks from Germany and Canada, and the English people, they love it, and I love it too.
And let's talk a little bit deeper about RCA Studios. That dates from the early 50s and a consistent part of the Nashville music scene.
It changed locations a few times, with RCA Records coming into town in the early 50s. Now, Studio B was built in 1957 for around $39,000, give or take, but they still record there in this space. Most frequently asked question is, do they still record here? And we do. And Elvis Presley himself recorded over 260 songs in that room.
Are you lonesome tonight? Do you miss me?
It became known as Studio B when RCA expanded a little bit next door with Studio A. And so when Studio A was built in 1965, that's when they called our studio Studio B because of its size. It was slightly smaller. So,
And I bet when you go in there, there's a palpable energy source in there. Tell us about that.
Well, we turn the lights down low, and we play you songs like Are You Lonesome Tonight from Elvis.
Shall I come back again? Tell me, dear, are you lonesome tonight?
And you'll hear Dolly Parton's I Will Always Love You.
Well, I would only be in your way. So I'll go.
And the Everly Brothers.
Dream, 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 dream. Dream, dream, dream.
Kathy's Clown, and you'll hear the great hits of Roy Orbison. Songs like Only the Lonely and Crying were recorded there.
Only the lonely know the way I feel tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Only the lonely.
Chet Atkins was the manager and producer, and so you have this touch of class from Eddie Arnold to Jim Reeves to the great country voice of Charlie Pride.
Some old friends on the street, they wonder how does a man get to be this way. I've always got a smiling face.
All being recorded in this room. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, you name it.
A long time forgotten, dreams have just fell by.
It's a pretty unprecedented history. They just don't make studios like that anymore. And the technology was limited, but the skills they had were great. And the music is priceless, and it is there every single day. So it's a very precious thing, because a lot of these places get torn down over the years. They're forgotten about. Elvis recorded Heartbreak Hotel in Nashville in 1955, but that place is gone. And so Studio B is even more precious to us now.
So anybody that's coming to Nashville to savor the music experience, these are all must-do stops.
Oh, yeah. The Ryman Auditorium, the Grand Ole Opry, and then you have the Country Music Hall of Fame and our Hatch and Studio B tours, and they're just fabulous. It's fun, and it's historical.
In the Hall of Fame and Museum, you talked about the event space, and that is for major live performances of current musicians, correct, or is it private contracted space?
Well, we have a CMA theater, and that can be used for both private events and also public ticketed events. And so it's been incredible. We've had Alan Jackson in there, we've had Diana Ross, Charlie Daniels, we had Old Crow Medicine Show doing an entire Bob Dylan album.
I want your job, man. You get to meet all these people. That is so cool.
It's been amazing. Even some of our coworkers have history with performing on the Grand Ole Opry, and so we're all part of the story, and we just want to keep the heritage alive and introduce a new generation of fans to country music, both old and new.
For further information,
countrymusichalloffame.org, and you can check out what we have coming up in the future. We'd love to have you guys here in Nashville. My name is George Dager, and thank you so much for listening.
George, what a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's been awesome. Thank you for your time.
Pretty woman walking down the street. Pretty woman, the kind I like to meet. Pretty woman.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station.
I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
Crazy, I'm crazy for feeling
love me as long as you wanted. And then someday you'd leave me for somebody new. Worry, why do I let myself worry? Wondering what in the for thinking that my love could hold you. I'm crazy for trying and crazy for crying, and I'm crazy for loving you. Crazy for thinking that my